Climate change is coming to Iowa, and with it, more frequent and intense storms. This hour, stories of severe weather and recovery. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, I'll talk with Mayor Joel Greer of Marshalltown, which was hit by an EF3 tornado nearly a month ago. Also, the picture from Bondurant, which was hit by an EF2 twister that same day. We'll also hear from Alan Lamb of Des Moines, whose home was flooded with sewage after the flash flooding back in June. And we'll hear from meteorologist Alan Zarnetsky about the connection between severe weather and climate change. This news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Climate change is coming to Iowa, and with it, the likelihood of more frequent and intense storms. Today, we'll hear from some of those affected by this summer severe weather and stories of recovery and resilience of communities pitching in and pulling together after tornado damage, after flash flooding, that in the Des Moines area, if you remember back in June. Later, we'll hear from the Des Moines resident Alan Lamb. He's now living in an RV in his driveway. That's because on the night of June 30th, flash flooding filled his basement with sewage. First, let's focus on more recent tornado activity in the state. Marshalltown in central Iowa is recovering after an EF3 tornado with top sustained winds of 165 miles per hour ripped through the community of nearly 30,000. That was on July 19th. The twister damaged hundreds of homes, shut down a major employer, and damaged the historic courthouse, took its clock tower right off. Reports say about 200 people were injured by the storm itself or hurt during cleanup. Joel Greer joins us now live. Marshalltown Mayor Joel Greer, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Ben.
So take us back to July 19th. Where were you when the twister rolled in?
I had just acquired a vehicle a week before, and as a pilot, I'm always kind of watching the weather, and it looked to me like we had two little microcells that might cause hail damage. So I drove the 2.5-minute commute from the office to home, parked it in the brick garage, and weathered the storm there.
Mm-hmm. Turned out to be a good idea. Describe how the tornado moved through the town. How fast?
I think it was 12 to 14 minutes from sunshine to sunshine. No rain, and there was a little bit of sunshine between the two microcells. It was just really weird.
Mm-hmm. Weird in what other ways? I've seen some videos online. Were these twin twisters?
I think the second twister was the one that actually took the Tupelo off our courthouse, from what I could tell from the video. And it was weird in many respects. Like on our block, we had a tree go through somebody's kitchen. In our property, on our house, we had one little 5-foot twig come down from a tree that, if you looked at it wrong, would drop big branches. So we had no wind at our house.
So you were at your home when this happened?
I was. Mm-hmm. And my wife, who's a law partner and marriage partner, was here at the office. She had trouble getting everybody down in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
But the office did. We had a gas cap come off, so we were spewing gas and roof damage and some siding damage.
Mm-hmm. Was there enough warning?
I thought so. But again, I'm a weather watcher. We did know from, if anybody that gets an alert on the iPhone would know from the National Weather Service or different channels, including Iowa Public Radio, that we had some weather events coming and that we were under a watch. And the Bondurant tornado happened in time for many of us to see it on TV or hear about it on the radio.
So, yeah, so it was sweeping from the west to the east, Marshalltown a little bit east and north of Bondurant. So you were getting reports of this was serious, this was spawning tornadoes after hearing what was going on in Bondurant?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we did have the warning sirens go off, although I worried about that because about 6 weeks before we'd had those go off and nothing happened. And so people were complaining on the radio and in the newspaper that, hey, we're saying the sky is falling and nothing happened. Why are we blowing the sirens so readily?
Mm-hmm. I took the figure of about 200 people injured from a Des Moines Register article. Is that tally with what you have?
I I couldn't disagree with it one direction or the other. The night of the tornado, we did have a hospital representative at the fire station, which was our command center, and at that point, we'd only had about 18 people that had had shown up, and nobody with anything more than bruises and cuts. Nothing
bruises.
Like that, really.
Okay, so really minor injuries, would you say?
Yeah, I would. Nothing life-threatening. We didn't have to get a helicopter up here. And if you walk around even today in downtown three and a half weeks later, you would figure it's a miracle that nobody was killed. I mean, the damage was so severe. So many bricks came off buildings. So many trees crushed cars. And then the whole roof goes off of Lennox Corporation with people inside. It's amazing. Nobody was killed.
Mm-hmm. Lennox Corporation, tell us, operations were shut down, or are they still shut down?
Well, they're doing the cleanup. I heard that one line is actually up and running, so I think like they've experienced on Appella, we may have some machinery that has been moved, or maybe it's still even in place that is able to produce some things, but 900 people were the day after this tornado not reporting for work at Lennox because it had no roof, and there's a lot of cleanup to be done there.
Mm-hmm. What does town look like today, the downtown especially, because that was hard hit?
It's still blocked off, basically. You have to walk to Main Street. You can't drive on it very well. The courthouse is under major repair. Raycom's under major repair. A lot of the businesses downtown are just trickling open. A couple of restaurants have been able to come back to life. It still looks like a war zone.
Mm-hmm. What about disaster relief funding to help people out who perhaps weren't well insured?
Yeah, that is the major issue right now, whether we qualify for FEMA or not. It requires a certain level of having uninsured losses. And with the chance that we are not going to qualify for FEMA, we really badly need to have there are three funds that we're hoping to collect money for. One is the rebuild all of Marshtown, one is the downtown rebuild, and the third is for the people displaced and out of work right now.
Doesn't sound like you're very optimistic about that FEMA money.
I'm not. I've visited with too many mayors from towns that have experienced disasters, and nobody's given me a whole lot of hope for any immediate relief, and frankly, because nobody was killed, and we didn't have a major on-the-ground twister that destroyed a whole bunch of buildings in a row. I'm worried that we won't qualify.
When will you know?
Nobody knows that answer either.
Okay.
I'm told it could be a while. I did know that there were people from FEMA that were in town last Thursday and Friday, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that from our city administrator.
What about the residential area? How many homes affected and in what condition?
That's the count we really need to get and get to FEMA and know whether they were insured or not. I would be hazarding a guess if I told you 200, 400, 500. I really don't know. If you drive around the east side of town or you drive around our neighborhood, it looks to me like there are an awful lot of people that have been displaced or should be displaced, and there are more blue tarps on roofs than you could imagine still.
What's the feeling in Marshalltown, Mayor, right now after the recovery has had several weeks?
Yeah, well, the theme Marshalltown Strong has popped up as kind of our theme song. Somebody painted a nice painting on our graffiti wall at the skate park that launched that, and that is kind of the feeling around here. We'll not only rebound, the stores will open, our town will look better in 3 years. Will be a better place to live. And like Parkersburg, we'll have more young families living here than we did a month ago before the storm.
Mm-hmm. What do you have to do to get, we talked about FEMA, but what has to happen before that happens?
Well, we need to collect money. We do need more contributions. We get eclipsed by the fires up in Canada and California and by the boat accident in Missouri, and so we are soon forgotten. But we've still got people that are going to be displaced from their homes, and they need the help. And we do have some pretty good, quick resources, like with the Thai Foundation, to try to get together a good city plan, hire a city planner, and do this in a coordinated fashion so it really does look better after we're done.
Marshalltown is really known as being a diverse community. You have, I don't know how many languages spoken in among your residents, right?
I've heard 30 to 50 in the high school.
Wow.
And at the packing plant.
Yeah. How did that color this natural disaster and recovery?
It didn't much. Most of the flyers and things handed out and dropped off at the homes are in at least two languages. But what we've discovered in doing the door-to-door canvassing, the younger generation speaks English and can translate for the older generation. So there have not been a whole lot of translators that I've heard were needed to be able to collect information and go door-to-door.
Mm-hmm. We have just a minute left. That clock tower got ripped off. How far did it travel before hitting the ground?
A third of it went half a block to the east, which was the main wind direction, and it turned the corner going to the left to the north and went another half block and ended up in front of Vaughn's Pub. It was just one of the strangest things to see as I was winding my way from home to the fire department.
Mm-hmm. In other parts of the program, we're going to talk about flash flooding, but I wonder for you as mayor there, is there a lot of discussion in your town planning when you talk about the future about climate change, the theories of climate change, more intense, more frequent storms? Do you plan for that? Do you talk about that?
There has not been a lot of discussion. I'm a believer that we are experiencing the climate change, and these two microcells were a good example of it. But I know that too. The Raycon building was built to withstand an EF5 tornado. It's being rebuilt now. I'll bet they're shoring it up even more.
Okay, Joel Greer, Marshalltown Mayor. Thank you very much for your time, Mayor.
Thanks for having us on, man.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. A disaster check-in of sorts this half hour, talking about the tornado damage. Next half hour, we'll be talking with people impacted by that June 30th flash flood. But let's keep with the disasters from above in terms of wind, first of all. Also on July 19th, that same storm that spawned the Marshalltown tornado, spawned a tornado that damaged dozens of homes in Bondurant, northeast of Des Moines. The National Weather Service confirmed an EF2 tornado. That's with an estimated peak wind speed of 115 miles per hour. Touched down in Bondurant. That was just before 3 in the afternoon. It created something like a 40-yard-wide path. Angie Kreese is with us, a resident of Bondurant. Hi, Angie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for talking with us, and I hope that Bondurant is cleaning up, and let's talk a little bit about your experience. I understand that you were not home at the time.
I was not. I was at work at the time. I didn't even know that there was severe weather in the area.
Right, and I've heard that it was a quick-moving storm, and it took a lot of people by surprise.
Yes, from what I understand, there wasn't much notice. The sirens went off, and then within a few minutes, the tornado was in sight and damaging houses.
Mm-hmm. So you were not at home. Was any of your family at home?
No, it happened. Just so happened that my kids were at a friend's house, so they were able to seek cover but not have any damage in the location that they were at.
And no injuries?
No injuries.
Thank goodness. So tell us, what did you find when you got home? What did it look like?
Like I said, I didn't even realize that there was severe weather, so I wasn't sure what to expect. I did have to explain where I lived. There was the Polk County Sheriff was not letting people who did not live in Bondurant into the town. Once I was able to get into the town, I had to park about 4 blocks away. There was a major gas leak, 3 houses down from mine. And so they were not letting people into the area, vehicles into the area. Once I was able to get into the area, I took a look at my house. I walked into the backyard. What I saw was a large 2x4 sticking out of the roof of my house. It had just speared down into my house. I was missing siding. I had broken windows. My fence was gone, and half of the posts were broken off at the ground level, and they were gone. One was in my neighbor's house. The rest were just gone.
Mm-hmm. You said there was a large 2x4. Was that part of your house or part of someone else's house that speared into your house?
It was from someone else's house.
Okay. And did it go into a room? Where did it land? Did it get entirely through the exterior of the house?
It came down through the roof, and it just landed. It stuck into the attic, so it didn't go through the ceiling, just created a large hole in the roof. And there were other holes in the roof. The attic cover was displaced, so you could look up into the attic and see the sky.
So talk a little bit about what you saw when you went inside the house.
Well, I did have some windows broken on the second story, and that's where the bedrooms are. In the master bedroom, there was glass everywhere, shingles, pieces of evergreen trees. There was damage to the walls from the debris that hit the walls. The carpet had to be all pulled up. It had also blown the glass into the hallway and into the bedroom across from the master bedroom. So all of that carpet also had to be pulled out. The bed has to be thrown away because of the amount of glass and all of the bedding, the curtains. It was a mess. The pictures were fallen down. Lamps were fallen down.
Mm-hmm.
It was just covered.
Yeah. Did you lose anything that was really dear to you, or can this all be replaced?
It can all be replaced. I was very lucky. I didn't lose anything that that had any sentimental value. It just was very hard to see something. I've lived in Bondurant in the same house since it was built 17 years ago. It was very hard to understand, comprehend the situation where you leave in the morning and everything is okay, and you've built this house up for 17 years, and you come home and it's just a big mess, and it just seems all broken.
Mm-hmm. Are you living in that home right now?
I am. I did stay with someone for the first two nights. After that, I did move home. I did not have gas the first few days because the exhaust pipe for my water softener, I'm sorry, my water heater was smashed in on my roof, and so I was not able to turn the gas on until that was fixed because of carbon monoxide issues.
Mm-hmm.
I also didn't have air conditioner the first few days. That's all been fixed. I do have a new roof. I am sleeping on the couch. I still don't have a bed or carpet, and there's still glass in the room. So I am sleeping on the couch, but I am home.
Mm-hmm. And your son is there as well?
He is there. He is sleeping in a different bedroom because his room was also affected with glass. But we are all making do. You know, it's just nice to be home in your own space.
Yeah, sure. What does your son think of all this, his experience, and what happened to his home?
Well, he's 13, and so he thinks it's pretty cool. He was inviting friends over to show it off the first few days. So he's kind of impressed by it all. But I know he would prefer to be in his own room. Right now we're packing everything up from the upstairs so we can get it all moved out so we can get walls repainted. There's concern about glass embedded in the walls, so we have to do some fixing of that and then get carpet down.
Mm-hmm. Take us back to the initial recovery. How fast did people start pitching in? Did the city start pitching in?
Oh, it was amazing how many people came out. It was right away. There was neighbors and people I don't know, residents, coming around with gloves and just helping everybody haul things to the curb. The city, they quickly set up an emergency location where individuals could go and give their information, help, or ask for help. And then by the next day, the Red Cross was there, Salvation Army was there. There were people that night were walking around. I know one woman and her family were walking around with a wagon, and they had bottles of water and little bags of chips and hot dogs, and they were just walking around the neighborhood handing out chips and hot dogs.
Mm.
Casey's in town, they had made pizzas. They were walking around handing out free pizza. I know Pizza Ranch was there as well handing out free pizza. The fitness facility in town, they opened their doors so people could take showers, which I appreciated since I didn't have hot water. And then the local coffee shop also was giving out free breakfast the next morning. So it seemed like everybody just came together very quickly and did what they could to help out right away.
Wow. That sounds uplifting, actually.
It really was. You know, you always think that in a time of crisis, everyone will come together and do their part, but you just don't really know until it happens, and you don't know how impactful it is until you're the one who needs the help, and everybody just shows up without being asked.
And they did.
And they did. Yes, it was wonderful.
Mm. What's your personal timeline for recovery right now?
I have my roof done, and I am getting my windows replaced and all my siding replaced, and I'm hoping that can happen in the next couple of weeks. Once that's done, then they can work on the inside, and then the fence and deck, garage door, light fixtures outside, they need to be fixed as well. I'm hoping that it'll be done within the next 2 months, maybe three, but I know that everybody's busy. Every day I come into town and I see more roofs being replaced and more siding being replaced, so I know everybody's in a hurry to get it done, so it's understandable that it's going to take a little bit of time.
Right. Angie, what would I see? What would we see if we drove through the most damaged parts of Bondurant today?
You will see a few houses that are extremely damaged, one missing a roof, one missing the whole second story. I think those are probably going to take a lot more time. I haven't seen much repairs on those houses, so I'm not sure what the expectation is with those. But all of the other houses in that area, you'll see some new roofs. You'll see a lot of workers out there putting on siding and rebuilding fences. And it's really comforting to see the progress happening. You'll see a new roof every day. And so just knowing that things are moving forward just gives you a good feeling that things are moving on and we're getting back to normal, hopefully.
Imagine talking with your friends and neighbors in Bondurant. You've heard quite a number of stories from others about their experiences. Do you have a story from someone else that impressed you who perhaps experienced the storm at home?
Well, I know I've heard of people who were at home, and the number one thing that they talked about was the amount of pressure in the area, and you know, they were in the basement, and they just couldn't believe the amount of pressure that they felt. I know one person who did not have enough time to get to the basement, and she lives a couple houses down from me, and she just dove under the bed. She didn't know where else to go, and so she just dove under the bed, and she was okay. I know someone who I heard that someone did not have insurance, and had some damage to their roof, and I understand that a couple of roofing companies came together and repaired the roof for them without any, you know, cost.
No.
So it was good.
Well, Angie Kreese, thank you for the snapshot as Bondurant recovers from an EF2 tornado, estimated wind speeds peaking at 115 miles per hour, hitting Bondurant on that July 19th, a storm in the afternoon. Angie Kreese, we wish you continued wonderful recovery and others in Bondurant as well. It sounds like you have damage which will be repaired and put aside in the near future, and you can be proud of the way your town reacted to this disaster.
Yes, I am very proud with how things are moving along.
Angie Kreese, thanks.
You're welcome.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll hear from Alan Lamb of Des Moines. His home was flooded with sewage after that flash flooding on June 30th. Also from Phil Delafield of the city of Des Moines. And Alan Czarnecki about the connection between severe weather and climate change. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Sort of a disaster checkup or check-in this hour. We're hearing from some of those affected by this summer's severe weather, stories of recovery, earlier stories of tornado recovery in Bondurant, Marshalltown as well. But remember June 30th? That was the flash flood period that dumped 9-10 inches of rain in less than 4 hours in the Des Moines area. Now, Des Moines is spending millions of dollars to purchase dozens of homes that sustained heavy damage because of that flood, a voluntary buyout program aimed at homes that sustained the worst damage in that storm. Alan Lamb is with us. He's a 63-year-old resident of the Four Mile Creek area of Des Moines. Hi, Alan.
Hello there.
I understand you are one who will be bought out. You were letting them buy your home?
Yes, I was very happy to hear that they was going to buy my house.
Mm-hmm. And before this was even decided, you had a sign out in front of your house. Maybe it's still there. What did it say?
It said, City of Des Moines, please buy my house.
Okay.
And it worked. It was fabulous.
You've lived in this house 40 years, I understand, and you're referring to the floods of 93, of 2008, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're just tired of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Tell us about the condition of your house after this latest flash flood.
At 12:30 at night, I woke up to kind of a... And I went downstairs, and then all of a sudden, the water was shooting out of my toilet. 2 foot, 3 foot high.
Did you say out of your basement? Did you say out of your toilet?
Out of the toilet. Yes, out of the toilet, coming out of my sink. In the this is in the bathroom downstairs. The downstairs was completely finished. It has a bedroom down there, and that and. Yeah, it was coming out of the drains, out of the toilet.
This is not clean water.
No, this is sewage water. This is sewage water, and it is filling up the basement really quick. I'm going to say within 45 minutes, the basement was completely full.
Of sewage?
To the ceiling.
Of sewage.
Of sewage. And see, at that time, the water hadn't started to – there was no water on the outside of my house at all. And then, within a half hour, that's when the flood water started coming in, and it moved in fast. It moved in like a tidal wave. It just, and I had 2 foot of water in my family room upstairs. It never got into my living room area, but then on the outside, all around, there was 2 foot, 3 foot of water, and it filled my garage. I had two cars in my garage, and it ruined those two cars and a motorhome in my driveway, and I got them out before the floodwaters.
Mm-hmm.
But the other two were destroyed. The whole house is just the basement, clear to the ceiling in the basement. So
what it sounds like... Just horrific damage done in very short time. I mean, not only was it not, were you flooded, but you had your house, the lower part of your house, fill up with sewage.
Yes.
What were your thoughts then? What was running through your mind?
I truthfully, I had called my brother, and my brother was, he comes in a heartbeat. Anyway, one of the neighbors had a pump and told us that we could use it if we wanted it. And my brother said, well, let's get this pump. And I told my brother, I said, I'm done. I can't do it no more. I mean, absolutely, I give. I absolutely give. I can't do it no more. I'm at my wit's end. You know, this is the third time that it's happened. And by this time, by far, was the worst it's ever been. Me and my brother got the basement pumped out. And then we started tearing out sheetrock because there's insulation and it's just holding the stinky water in there. This is before I knew there was a buyout. He kept pushing me, knowing I didn't want to do it, but he knew it had to be done. But we took the sheetrock down and I kept telling my brother, I'm done. I can't do this. I can't do this.
Were there tears sometimes?
Oh yeah, yeah. There definitely is tears. Absolutely, just you know, it just it hurts. It hurts to lose everything you got.
I believe it.
And yeah, I was very happy to hear that the city is buying my house. It's in the process.
Alan, we have just a minute or so left. So where are you living now?
I am in. Living in my driveway in my motorhome. As soon as I had to have a utility pole put in, a new electric pole put in my front yard because they cut the power to my house. So right now I'm in my driveway in my motorhome.
All right. Well, we wish you all the best. Long term, do you see yourself living in another part of that area in Des Moines?
No, because I was planning on doing some traveling with my motorhome anyway, but I will probably rent an apartment. I'm to the point in my life I'm tired of doing yard work and
right.
and taking care of everything that goes with the house, so
right.
that I'll probably just be in an apartment.
Right, and something tells me wherever you put down your next roots, you'll pay attention to where there's a river or a creek.
Oh, yes. Yes, 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 yes. I tell everybody, anybody I hear that's getting ready to buy a house, check it out. Check it out. I find out, you know, has there been a flood in this area? And even if you're at the bottom of a hill, does this area flood? So, yes.
Alan Lamb.
I definitely do.
A horrific story. We're glad you came out of it and you're getting your house purchased. We wish you all the best in the future.
All right. Thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, let's continue talking about the impact and the recovery from this flash flooding that happened on June 30th in the Des Moines area. Phil Delafield is with us, Assistant City Manager for the City of Des Moines. Hello, Phil.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Hi. So give us a wide view, a bigger view of what happened in the city of Des Moines, the extent of the flooding, a picture for the rest of us in the state.
All right. I'm happy to do so. So on June 30th, the evening of June 30th, thunderstorms hit. We were not anticipating anything out of the ordinary, but as the storm developed, it seemed to intensify. And late into the evening, we received around 10 inches of localized heavy rainfall into the Des Moines metropolitan area. For Des Moines, that meant that not only did the normal areas that are subject to flooding receive a lot of water, but areas that we did not anticipate or had not had prior experience with flooding in those areas. So old ravines, the topological areas where water would normally accumulate, hit the sewer systems in those areas, and because of the intense rainfall, we had an incredible amount of water flowing overland and overwhelming the storm sewer system.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, we probably had somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,850, 1,860 properties that were impacted at some level. In addition, we had 25 commercial properties, 7 with major, 5 with minor, 13 affected. And we're starting to see the results now of the flood recovery effort. So the permits are starting to come in, and people are beginning to recover from the damages. I would also say that because of the unprecedented area-wide dispersal, we had to step up our contingency plans. So the city quickly put in place a buyout program. We also put in place an assistance program for lower income people that have had mechanical, electrical, or plumbing problems with the flood. Within that time period, we also had an incredible amount of debris removal. As I said earlier, we did not yet have the full grasp of the impact on the community, and we started out with a drop-off program with roll-offs located in various spots localized to the flooding, but as we learned quickly that was not adequate to the need, and within 48 hours of the flood, we were doing curbside pickup.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite an effort, and I would say that the recovery period will last a considerable period yet to come, but we are well on our way towards that recovery.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the buyout program. We just spoke with Alan Lamb. He's a resident of the Four Mile Creek area of Des Moines. I believe he will have his house bought out. Tell us, how does this program work? How do you, what criteria do you use?
Well, this is a locally organized program. We were not at all confident that the level of damage would reach the needs necessary for federal assistance, so we put our own program into place, and we established criteria based on other prior planning efforts and priorities. Principal among those would be the location in the floodplain, structural damage significant enough to be caused major or structural, and then other buyout opportunities where it gives us the opportunity to correct or reduce infrastructure needs. So, for example, in the Four Mile area, this is an area that was built starting in the 20s and on through current time, largely developed in a period of time before floodplain management regulations, and there were a lot of properties that are located in the floodplain. So that being one of the priorities, we wanted to reduce the exposure for the people living in those areas and offer assistance to help them get out. The program itself is 110% of the assessed value, and you would convey the property to the city, and we are proceeding along with that fairly well right now. As of last Friday, our buyout program, we had 95 total eligible property owners, and 17 have declined. 74 have agreed to participate, and I should reinforce that this is a totally voluntary program. So 21 of the level, of the destroyed level, 37 of the major damage, and 16 owners of the minor damage have all agreed to participate. There are still a lot of offers that are out there, and our estimates on the total cost are around $14 million at this point.
Where are the funds coming for? From
those are general fund dollars, and we will likely have to issue debt for portions of it. We have also partnered with Polk County, there is a planning study for the 4 mile greenbelt that we had identified priority structures that we wanted to remove from the floodplain, and Polk County has had a plan in place to create a greenbelt in this area and has some funds that were that were made available. So our thanks to Polk County Conservation and their ability to help. We also use stormwater utility funds that are used that are fees paid by the city and are used to reduce flood related problem.
When you have discussions there at your level, the administrators of Des Moines, do you figure in climate change predictions of more intense storms like this, 10 inches of rain in a matter of 3 or 4 hours? Do you talk about times changing weather-wise?
Absolutely. There is discussion about how the these weather impacts are changing how planning has to occur for a city. And especially in central cities like Des Moines, where a good portion of the community was built prior to any consideration for rainfall events other than just perhaps in passing. So, again, we were built at the junction of two rivers. The opportunities that those rivers gave us at the time of the city's founding were immense. But as the city has matured, we have infrastructure deficits that just need to be corrected. And as we move forward into this sort of new era of understanding of what climate change means to us, we have to incorporate those lessons into how we redesign our infrastructure.
Phil Delafield is Assistant City Manager for the City of Des Moines. Thank you for this chat, Phil.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And finally, on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, after an hour of listening to stories of severe weather, storm recovery, tornadoes, flash flooding in that case this summer here in Iowa, let's check in with Alan Czarnecki, professor of meteorology at the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls. Hello, Alan.
Hi, Ben. Good to be with you.
Good to have you on the program again. So mid-August, looking back of the summer that we've had so far, how would you size up severe weather so far this summer and spring?
Well, we have certainly had a couple of outbreaks of some pretty intense severe weather. Maybe overall we're about on track. If you look at the number of tornadoes, for example, for the year in Iowa, we're not really too far off of the average. We usually have about 46 tornadoes per year, and I think we're right around the 40 mark right now. So and tornadoes become much less common as the summer plays out into the fall. So we hope we maybe have seen the last of our tornadoes for the year. But certainly we have had intense outbreaks and also heavy rain events. That was very noteworthy.
Right. And perhaps you heard the comment there by Phil Delafield of the city of Des Moines there, that they absolutely do plan on, you know, predictions of climate change, weather, more intense, more severe, more frequent weather. Is there anything in evidence that you've seen in Iowa in the last few months that you can pin on new climate change weather?
Well, one of the expected outcomes or consequences of climate change is the increased frequency, intensity, and or amount of heavy precipitation. And so the event that we saw in the Des Moines area at the end of June certainly fits with that. In fact, there was, I might point you, I guess, to a study that was published in the Journal of Climate, and the authors looked at about 400 rain gauges in the central U.S., and it, the network that they used, they had to have at least 50 years' worth of data, so it covered a pretty significant time period. And what they found is that there is an increasing trend in heavy rainfall, especially over the northern part of that study area, which does include Iowa. So the heavy rain events that we have seen this summer and that we have seen in recent summers certainly fit with that expectation of climate change.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you know in particular about the storm that dumped. I understand it was a storm that, sort of stalled in the Des Moines area and it kept dumping rain. I mean, do you understand or can you help us understand what happens when so much rain comes down so quickly? What is happening in the atmosphere?
Well, it certainly does help to have storms that are slow moving. Storms have a life cycle, maybe about 30 to 60 minutes or so. And so when you have heavy rainfall over the course of several hours, that wasn't a single storm that did that. And so the you know, typically storms kind of move on. They move through the area. They may continue to develop new storms, sort of the birthing stage of new storms. But they tend to be downwind from where the parent storm originated. If you have very light winds in the atmosphere, on the other hand, what often happens is that the new storms form upwind of the parent thunderstorm. And so we get an effect that's known as training, or sort of like a railroad train where the cars follow one behind the other. And when you have this back building, as we call it, what happens is that the storms that form keep moving over the same area, and it produces the very heavy rain that that we saw in Des Moines, for example, at the end of June. So again, it's not one storm that did that, but actually several that just kept passing over the same ground.
And when we have a warmer atmosphere, when the Earth warms, we have more energy in the atmosphere, broadly speaking. Is it, simplistically speaking, perhaps, is more energy up there means more intensity?
Well, probably what the biggest factor is that the fuel for heavy rain events is to have ample or excessive water vapor in the atmosphere. The warmer things are, the easier it is to evaporate water, or the more water vapor you can get into the atmosphere. So there's more available to storms when they do form. And certainly having a warmer atmosphere, especially at lower levels, does help with the intensity of rising motion in storms.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably more so the availability of the water vapor.
Mm-hmm. Here's something I hear thrown out from people who would be more sort of climate change deniers. A question like this: How can future weather due to climate change be predicted in the coming years when it's hard to predict the weather for next week?
Well, I guess what I would argue is that our ability to project the weather up to a week in advance has greatly improved from what it had been, say, 15 years ago or so. You know, one of the things that we look at for, the future climate, et cetera, are wind patterns in the upper atmosphere. And those are challenging. Those are challenging to anticipate. But even more so, it's difficult to always anticipate what the response will be at the surface. But what I would say is that we have had tremendous progress in the accuracy of weather forecasting that we have been doing. We expect that to continue. Will we ever have perfect forecasts? No. This isn't a business to get into if you want perfection in that area. But we do provide what we feel are very useful forecasts, forecasts that can be useful for planning.
Mm-hmm. What are you seeing for the rest of this summer?
You know, it looks like the projection from the Climate Prediction Center for August is that we may have near to below normal temperatures across the state, precip sort of near to maybe slightly above normal. So we'll kind of see how that plays out. The next number of days still look to be nice and warm, but after that, we may get into a little bit cooler pattern across the state.
So we don't want to declare victory too early, but that those scorching days that we had a few weeks ago, those will be our high points, our hottest days. Perhaps.
They may have been.
All right. We'll leave it there. Alan Czarnecki, professor of meteorology at the University of Northern Iowa. Thank you for your insights, Alan. Always good to talk with you.
Thanks, Ben.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Caitlin Harrop. Help today also from Lucy McGeehee. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Contact us anytime. Perhaps you have a suggestion for a program. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.